From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in today for Beth Ruyak. The destruction totals for the Camp wildfire burning in Butte County continue to rise as crews head into burnt-out areas to assess damage. And the fire itself still burning. Thousands have lost their homes and thousands remain evacuated. Earlier this morning, we had an opportunity to speak with FEMA's Regional Public Affairs Officer, Brandi Richard, about the federal response to this disaster. We started by asking about the agency's history of wildfire assistance in California and how will that affect its response to the campfire.
You know, we have an after-action process that I believe is excellent because after each disaster, we thoroughly review our processes to see how we can improve our disaster recovery and response initiatives, as well as mitigation and all the other components of what we do at FEMA. And with that process, we make our disaster execution better every time. We also work with state and local government and have exercises that we do on an annual basis to ensure that our work is coordinated in a way that is beneficial to citizens. And so I feel really good about where we are for the California wildfires and the assistance that we can provide and support to the citizens of California. And I'm sure we'll continue to get better over time. I'm sure there are things that we've learned from last year's wildfires that will be applicable today as we deal with the wildfires that we're dealing with right now.
Do your tactics change based on whether you're dealing with a disaster in a large city or a small town like Paradise?
Absolutely. And I believe just based on some of the news coverage I've seen that there were measures in place in Paradise that they thought would really be successful and work and didn't realize that when a fire engulfs the entire town, that that creates a different paradigm, if you will, a different set of circumstances that they would have to work with. And so we learn from all of those experiences and we get better as an emergency management agency. We get better as an emergency management community to be able to support individuals when a disaster strikes.
What will be the first steps for FEMA now that we're at the stage where FEMA will move in and start assisting the evacuees and survivors?
So we've already put requests in place for resources, people resources, and other things that we needed or that the state or local government requested from us. And those resources are coming in. We have staff that are coming in every day in order to support the recovery initiative now, whereas prior to this, we've really just been focused on the response initiative and helping to save lives. And while we'll continue to be in that space and continue to work to save lives and to fight these fires, we're now going to help individuals to recover when their homes have been damaged or destroyed based on these wildfires.
At this point, is FEMA playing a role in housing the evacuees?
Not immediately today. Right now, there are shelters set up, and we're playing a financial role in providing resources and support to make that happen through state and local government. And nonprofit organizations like the American Red Cross who have those shelters and things in place. But moving forward, as people register for assistance, we'll determine what sheltering is best for those populations and then communicate with them to put them in shelters, not necessarily shelters, but housing options that work best for them.
How will people register for assistance? Paradise is a small, remote area. Is this an entirely online process, or is there an office they need to go to? Will you have a mobile office?
So we will most definitely have a disaster recovery center. We do not have one set up yet, so I don't have an address to provide. But in the future, people can go to FEMA.gov/DRC. D is in disaster, R is in recovery, C is in center, to get information on where there's a disaster recovery center in their area. Right now, the best option is for them to call and register on our 1-800 number, which is 1-800-621-3362. If they have any issues with registering online, that will bring them directly to an individual who will walk them through the process of completing their registration and also answer any questions that they may have about resources that may be available, whether they're resources provided by governments or nonprofit organizations that we are aware of. Or that if they would like to, they can go on their mobile phone or computer to disasterassistance.gov and register for assistance that way. And that just jumpstarts the process. But we also encourage them to submit any insurance if they have insurance, to go ahead and submit those claims to their insurance company to get that process going, because as they participate in the registration process with FEMA, we'll need to know what they were eligible for from their insurance company to make a decision about what they're eligible for from us. So those are processes that they can start at the same time. We wouldn't want them to delay that insurance process waiting on a decision from FEMA.
There were some indications from the president through a tweet that federal aid may be withheld. Is there any reason people should have concern that FEMA won't come through when it's time for them to register and receive that aid?
No, not at all.
Brandi Richard, FEMA's Regional Public Affairs Officer, earlier today here at CAP Radio. Now we'd like to bring in North State Public Radio's Mark Albert, who has been in the fire zone and seen firsthand the devastation in the fire's wake. And Mark, help take us into the now burned out town of Paradise. What's left?
Well, honestly, not much. The high school is still standing, and much of the hospital is. Other than that, a few commercial structures, a couple of restaurants, but the devastation is widespread and truly unimaginable if you haven't been there yourself. I think one of the most moving things for me personally is coming back down the hill and seeing lines of cars trying to get through the blockades, trying to get through the checkpoints, and authorities turning people around. People have been away from their homes now for quite some time. The adrenaline is worn off. They're getting impatient. They want to get home. They want to get back to everything that they've gathered over their lifetimes. Don't forget that Paradise is mainly a retirement community. It has roots going all the way back to the gold rush, and there are several historic buildings up there, but since the logging and mining industries have waned, it's really become, it's kind of like a beautiful, much more affordable Lake Tahoe minus the lake, although Lake Oroville isn't far. It attracted quite a few people, and the median price of a home in Paradise was about half of what it is in California statewide. But the people wanting to get through and wanting to get back, I don't think they have an idea of just how little of their town is left. Walking through block after block and driving mile after mile, seeing one plot of land after another, one home site, one parcel after another, just ashes. Things barely recognizable. You can see chimney after chimney. It looks like devastation from World War II.
Mark, there was a small town center, but most of the people lived outside of that zone, right? Down like what would be long country roads?
Yes, that's correct. And that likely increased the hazards and made the evacuation that much more difficult. This is, don't forget, a beautiful foothill community. It is at about 1,700 to 2,000, 2,100 feet. As opposed to the valley where the streets are mainly in a grid fashion, in the foothills, there are a lot of sharp turns, there are blind corners, there are narrow roadways. And when all 26,000 people try to hit the road at once to get out, you have major traffic jams. When visibility is at zero, you have people crashing into each other and then blocking the roadways. When it just becomes an accident waiting to happen, authorities recognized how difficult it is to get out of Paradise, and about 7 or 8 years ago, I believe it may have actually been contained in the stimulus plan, but there was a shovel-ready project to pave a dirt road. Once you get beyond a certain point, Skyway became a dirt road, and it was paved all the way up to a place called Butte Meadows, where one can drive down to State Route 32. The reason being because there was always fear that fire would block exits from Paradise and that people would not be able to get down the hill. And this this pavement project connected a paved road up further, higher up into the foothills to give people an extra way to escape. Some people did escape that way. There's still, the sheriff's office has not revised downward the number of missing.
And where does that stand now?
Well, they at the conference yesterday, they did not revise their estimate. It still stands at 228. They said originally, I believe they received something on the order of 550 missing persons reports, but many of those were duplicated, and they located about 200 of those people. Apparently 228 people officially, anyway, remain missing, although that's entirely an estimate. Though, grimly, I can tell you that 150 rescue and recovery workers plus a two mobile morgue teams are on site. So the death toll is expected to rise, and if that's any indication, unfortunately, it could be much higher.
So you mentioned the people eager to get back into their homes at these blockades. I know in some cases they've asked journalists or workers who are, you know, part of the recovery effort to let them know if their home is still standing and that sort of thing. What have you heard from the people at these blockades as they try to get past the line and let back in?
Well, I actually did receive some personal calls from people asking me to check on their properties, and I had a list of three different properties to look at in Paradise. All three of them were completely demolished, nothing left but cement walkways, and in one case, washer and dryer completely, you know, just the metal left. I went on Monday. No, it was Sunday. I went on Sunday up to Concow, which is closer to where the fire broke out, and the devastation is quite intense. I saw remnants of the fire station up there. The road is extremely difficult to navigate, and I could not imagine what it was like during the fire with zero visibility. There's so many places where one could go right off of that road. You know, in the best of circumstances, there are 20-mile-an-hour turns on it. The countryside, which was covered in chaparral, the tops, all of that was burnt out, and there were hillsides that looked like it was burnt down to the mineral. I went to one site, the site of a ranch that had been in someone's family for half a century with long roots in the area, two-story farmhouse. Only thing left was the chimney. The only thing that survived living were 10 or 12 chickens in a chicken coop and a couple of ducks. I also saw some...
The chickens made it.
Yes, the chickens made it. Also some wild turkeys. Saw a group of wild turkeys apparently completely unscathed wandering about what was left of the property.
Wow. So, Mark, you had to then deliver the news to these people who asked you about their properties. That couldn't have been easy.
No, it certainly is not. I think a lot of people are resigned. One fellow who's a kind of hardened cowboy, he wouldn't go on mic. I think it's very difficult for him. And, you know, not necessarily this person in particular, but many, many others are retirees. They may be underinsured. It's a community that is not as prosperous as much of California. It's unclear what these properties will be worth now that they've been scoured by fire. It's a real open question as to whether people can afford to rebuild. And it's an open question in terms of planning in the state of California as to what types of you know, how safe are foothill communities, especially after this, after the Carr Fire went into Redding in the urban wildland interface, as well as the fire in Santa Rosa last year. There may be more regulations regarding curvy roads or defensible space. You know, Paradise is very well aware of the danger of wildfire, and people prepared for it. People built defensible space, and there were people in the community who were took it upon themselves to call in people who they felt were violators of the defensible space rules. And, you know, you'd have the planning office on them. So, you know, there are fire safe councils and people really pushing how important that is. And nevertheless, Paradise was certainly unprepared, and I don't think any community in the state could possibly be prepared for a fire that started, again, as you recall, 6:30 Thursday morning, first reports, and was just exploded over the hill by 10 o'clock or 11, certainly.
Yeah, with the winds blowing like that, as one person from CAL FIRE said, it would be like a single person standing to stop a hurricane. North State Public Radio's Mark Albert, he's firsthand experience in the fire zone. Mark, thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure.
All right, we're going to turn now to CAL FIRE's Deputy Director of Community Relations, Mike Muller, so that we can get some of the most recent statistics regarding the fire's size and containment levels. Welcome back to Insight, Chief.
Good morning.
Where do things stand now?
So now on the campfire, we're at 125,000 acres, 35% containment. Unfortunately, the structures destroyed is at 6,867. Still, again, 35% containment on 125,000 acre. We still have a lot of open fire line and a lot of work to do.
It's a grim question, but an important one as we take in just how destructive this fire has been. Where do we stand in the total number of lives lost?
Right now, it's through the Sheriff's, Butte County Sheriff's Department Coroner's Office, at 42. And we still have, through the Sheriff's Department, in conjunction with the management team, rescue personnel out there actively in those areas.
Chief Muller, how has the weather played a role in the past 24 hours? The winds, of course, a major factor at the initiation of this fire, and then a concern over the weekend. Has the wind kicked up at all?
No, in fact, overnight, the weather gave us an opportunity to increase that containment number. We're seeing the cooler nights. We're still seeing a little bit of wind conditions over the fire, but nothing like we had with the red flag warning. So right now, Mother Nature is on our side, cautiously optimistic, but we did have successes overnight, and the winds have died down.
We're seeing downright cold overnight temperatures. How does that help?
Well, it depends. So when we talk about, you know, the fire conditions, the cooler temperatures, you can still have active fire. But what happens overnight is those fuel beds are no longer preheated by the sunlight. So that slows the growth of the fire overnight and gives us an opportunity to get in there. But, yeah, the cooler temperatures definitely assist. But what we really need is that increase in humidity levels, which we just haven't seen yet.
I've heard secondhand information from firefighters there on the scene who say they can't remember a time they had to scrape, you know, ice off their windshield as they got in their truck to then head to fight a fire.
That's exactly true. I mean, it is getting chilly overnight. And on another point, besides the firefighters being exposed to the fire and the smoke itself, but it's also the elements that some of the firefighters are in overnight out on the fire line where you're getting temperatures are near the freezing mark. So a lot of different things that we have to look at when we have these type of operations.
All right, Chief Muller, give us a snapshot today. Where will the lines be drawn? What are you trying to accomplish in the next 24 hours?
Right now, it's still life, property, always our priority. We'll be embedded in the wildland urban interface areas, but also troops on the ground and in the air to increase that containment line and work as Mother Nature is on our side.
CAL FIRE Chief and Deputy Director of Community Relations Mike Muller with the very latest on the campfire burning in Butte County. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you so much.
And as always, we have more information on our website at capradio.org/insight. You know, you can get the latest fire updates by going to capradio.org/wildfire. You are listening to Insight on Cap Radio, your NPR station.